CIB. From Australian police records come these true stories of day and night vigilance that protects our lives and our property, of prevention and detection in the unceasing war against crime. CIB. From New South Wales, the true story of the vanishing bushman. This is a true story from Australian police records. Only names, place names, and dates have been altered. It was night time on a lonely river flat in outback New South Wales. A river flat where, since the district was first settled, the sundowners and vagrant bushworkers have hobbled their horses or have unrolled their swags and boiled their billy cans and stared into the embers of their campfires.
Here. Here, Smoky. Here, come on. There, don't you want you square, eh? Here, come on. Here, lie down, you silly coot. It's only one of old Burston's weathers. Here, down, you. Smoky! Who's there? Who's there? Show yourself!
Down, Smoky. Here, boy. Come here.
That's you?
Yeah. Me.
I told you to leave me alone. Leave me alone. Stop dogging me. Leave me alone. I ain't got nothing you want.
Oh, no. Ain't you?
If I have, then you take it. Honey, leave me alone. I ain't never done you no harm. No! 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 No!
Yes, I'm the new sergeant here. Hanfield's the name. Who are you?
I'm Bodley. Nick Bodley, sergeant from up Tybro way. This is my son, George.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Bodley. And you, George?
Yeah.
And take a seat.
Ah, thanks.
Well, anything I can do for you, Mr. Bodley? Anything on your mind?
Yeah, there is, as a matter of fact.
All right, let's have it. What's the trouble?
It's about old Jimmy Stokes, Sergeant. He's still missing. We come in last week and told your off-sider about it. Told Constable Todd, I mean. Didn't we, George?
Yeah, that's right, Dad.
Oh, well, now I've got it. Sure, Constable Todd told me. Jimmy Stokes is the old chap who usually camps down O'Malley's flat when he's passing through. Well, haven't you sighted him yet?
No, we ain't. And what's more, nobody else has neither.
I see.
Hey, look here, Sergeant. I don't like it. I reckon something's happened to that old bloke. You do too, don't you, George?
Yeah, Dad, I reckon it must.
Something's happened to him.
Well, what makes you think that?
Well, nobody's seen him since just after Christmas, and that's darn near 3 months ago. He ain't camped near any of his usual places. And I'll tell you something else.
Yes?
He ain't been to collect his pension since Christmas, neither.
Well, hasn't he now?
I reckon there's been foul play. That's what I reckon.
Well, what makes you say that, Mr. Bodley?
Because he's vanished, that's what.
Nothing else?
Well, that's enough, ain't it?
As a matter of fact, it isn't. Jimmy Stokes has been on the road between here and Coonabarabran for years. He's a wanderer. Always has been. And, you know, he just didn't up and take it into his head to go down to the Big Smoke for the show.
Ah!
Now, look, relax, Mr. Bodley. The betting's 100-1 he'll turn up.
Yeah? Come on, George, we'll go.
Yeah, Dad. Okay.
Well, now look, Mr. Bodley, be reasonable. It's not that we...
Dry up. Come on, George.
Well,
The sergeant's attitude to that first report that the old bushman was missing from his usual haunts was perfectly natural. If country policemen began hunting for every sundowner who didn't show up on the track when his mates expected him, the door of every bush police station would bear a permanent notice, "Back next week." But in this case, the realities were different. Nick Bodley and his son knew something was wrong. They patiently and stubbornly continued their inquiries for the missing Jimmy Stokes. And then one day on stock sale day in a neighboring town...
Hey, George.
Hey? What, Dad?
Hey, look over there by the sulky. That bay gilding.
Yeah? Well, what about it?
That's Jimmy Stokes's bay. You know, the one he had with his outfit. I'll bet me socks it is.
Gee, Dad. By gee, I'll bet you'd win, too. That is old Jimmy's horse.
Here, come on. Excuse me, mate. Sorry, excuse me. Hey, just a minute. Are you over there?
You talking to me, mate?
Yeah, I am. Is this your jigger?
Yeah, it is. What about it?
Oh, nothing. My name's Nick Bodley. I live down Tybro way. I know you, don't I?
Do you?
Yeah, your name's Schultz, ain't it?
Correct.
I'm a friend of old Jimmy Stokes.
Yeah?
Yeah. How did you come by Jimmy's horse?
Jimmy's horse? Of this you mean?
That I mean. I'd know that bay anywhere.
Listen, mug. That old wombat Stokes never owned this horse in his life, see? I reared him from a foal, see? From a foal!
Ah, you did. I must have been mistook, Schultz, mustn't I?
Yeah, you must. This horse is mine, see? Mine. I reared it from a foal. Remember that, Bodley.
This time the police did take notice. This time they had very good reason to. First, there was a specific allegation by both Nick Bodley and his son that the horse in the possession of Schultz had been the property of the missing bushman. Bodley was a reputable countryman. He was not the sort to make wild accusations, and not the sort to be mistaken in the identification of an animal. He'd lived his life in a region where people remember horses and dogs when they can't be certain of remembering men. And secondly, there was the man, Schultz himself. He had his place in the files of the local police station.
Martin Stanislaw Schultz, released May, Riverfield Mental Hospital. Convictions, forgery and uttering, larceny, assault. As long as your arm. Have you seen this, Ellen?
Yes, I've seen it.
You know him, then?
I know him.
Yes, I see you do. Well, he's been around these parts for some time, eh?
Too long.
Is he off his head?
Well, if you mean is Schultz certifiable, then the answer's no. I don't think he is. Well, he's been in and out of asylums half his life, but look at the pattern of his record. He commits a crime, he gets caught, he pretends madness. He's certified before he can plead and is transferred from jail to a mental hospital. Then a few months later, all of a sudden, he gets sane again and he's released. Oh, no. Schultz is not mad, Sergeant. He's cunning.
Then,
what?
You think we may have a murder case on our hands?
I don't know. I think it's a possibility.
Right. We'd better get a move on. Where did you say he was camped?
Last I heard, he was at Cairns Reserve, past the 10-mile peg on the North Road.
Right. You hold the fort. I'll handle this myself.
Yeah, but...
I know. He may cut up rough. But he won't for long.
Good day.
Good day.
You're Marty Schultz, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. You're the new sergeant.
Yes. A nice camp you've got here.
Yeah. It'll do me.
That bay gelding over there is
Is he your property? I said, is that bay your property?
He's mine. Raised him from a fowl.
And all this gear, the bike and the tents and the sulkies, all yours?
Yeah. Yeah, Doctor. All mine. All mine.
You can save yourself the trouble, my friend. You're no madder than I am. Where did you get that bay, I asked you? Come on, Schultz. We've got every good reason to believe that that horse belonged to a man called Stokes. A man who disappeared.
Stokes, eh? Stokes?
Yes, Stokes. Come on, Schultz. I'm taking you in.
Hello, Sergeant. How'd you go with Marty Schultz? Yeah, what's wrong?
Do me a favor, Alan, will you?
Oh, sure.
Wind up that telephone and get me the district super. Tell Flo on the exchange. It's urgent.
Trouble?
I think so.
Old Jimmy Stokes, huh?
Alan, I don't mind telling you. If old Jimmy Stokes was the only problem, I think we might be able to handle it. But Jimmy Stokes isn't. There's a lot of that gear in the camp that I think belonged to Stokes and...
Yeah?
And there's gear I think that belonged to other men as well. Men who have gone missing too.
The case of the vanishing bushman was one of the most intensive and difficult investigations recorded in the annals of the Criminal Investigation Branch of the New South Wales Police Force. Two Sydney detectives were sent to help the local men. And at times, large numbers of police were used to comb the countryside in search of evidence. For when property found in Martin Schultz's possession at Cowan's Reserve was carefully examined, it was found to contain articles, as Sergeant Handerfield had suspected, which had belonged to at least two other bushmen who habitually travelled through the district. And both of these men were missing. They'd been missing for months. Schultz was repeatedly questioned.
Come on, Schultz. We know the bay gelding belonged to Jimmy Stokes. We know you've got his bedding and his tent, his boots and the rest. And that you had his sheepdog, Smokey. Where is Jimmy Stokes?
Don't be a fool, Schultz. We'll find out, you know.
How about this, Schultz? Bet you something.
What will you bet me?
You didn't know thistles were good tucker, did you? Have a thistle.
Where is Jimmy Stokes, Schultz?
Jimmy Stokes? I never knew him. Never knew him.
We've got dozens of witnesses to prove that you did know Jimmy Stokes. You camped with him. We know that.
Look. Look.
What is it?
It's a bird. A bird.
Oh. Now listen, Schultz, we know something else, too.
Yeah. What do you know? Tell me. Look, look. Sheep. Old man Burston sheep, all over the countryside. Cripes, you'll be mad. Mad as a snake. I'm mad too, you know. I've been in the loony bin. You ask him.
You're not mad, Schultz. You'll never get away with that stunt again. You've pulled it once too often.
Not mad? Not mad. What do you know, eh?
We know you were in possession of a bicycle belonging to another old man named Brennan. Louis Brennan. We know that you had leather goods belonging to him. Plated leather goods he used to make and sell for a living. We know you've had articles of clothing belonging to him. Brennan's missing, Schultz.
Schultz, where's Brennan?
It's no good, man. We've told you, that stunt won't work. The doctors won't fall for it again.
We know about Purse Weir, too, Schultz. We know you've got his sulky and his shirts and his razors and his tucker box.
And his spectacles and watch. Purse Weir is missing too, Schultz. How did you come by his property? All right, Schultz. We'll find out. We'll be back. In the end, you'll talk.
Three men missing. All old and possibly eccentric bush wanderers. Men without homes and families. Men whose movements could not be anticipated. But men who had all within 6 weeks vanished on the lonely stretches of road where Schultz was known to have been traveling at the time. But remember this, it was all suspicion. No trace of them could be found. There was nothing to prove that they were dead. Nothing to prove that they had not given to Schultz or sold to him the property found in his possession. From time to time, after days of long traveling and patient work, the police engaged on the case held conferences.
There's only one thing to do. Keep on with it until we've found some trace of them.
Or their bodies, Inspector.
Or their bodies, Alan.
Say we never find a trace.
Sooner or later, we will.
I believe that, too. But things could turn out the other way. The river and all the creeks have been flooded since Christmas.
Yes, worse luck.
You mean, if Schultz killed them, he could have burned or dismembered the bodies and disposed of the remains in the river?
That's what he would do.
He puts our weights up. But whatever happens, we'll crack this one.
We'll build up such a volume of evidence on the course of Schultz's conduct that we'll go to court and prove he's a murderer, even if we never find a body.
Shucky, I hadn't thought of that one. Evidence of system. Evidence of a course of conduct.
Before you take that sort of evidence into court, you've got to have it sewn up. The whole bang lot.
Well, come on, let's get busy. Get everything we can about the movements of the missing men and match it with everything we can about the movements of Schultz.
Okay. And what about going through the ashes of the old campfires in these places where he's known to have camped?
Do that, too. We're bound to crack something.
Bound to crack something. I wonder how many of the police really believed that. I wonder how many of them believed that they'd really be able to prove the charge of murder against Schultz without having found some remains identifiable as the body of one of his victims. Whatever they believed, they worked. Worked like dogs, covering thousands of square miles of the outback, interviewing hundreds of people, seeking to trace and reconstruct the movements of the missing men and of the accused, seeking to prove beyond any reasonable doubt a designed course of conduct, a system of behavior that would convict Schultz of the crimes that they knew in their heart of hearts he'd committed. The evidence that Schultz had had the opportunity to commit the crimes, because he'd been seen in close proximity to the missing men shortly before they disappeared.
Good day.
Good day.
You're Mr. Hannon, aren't you?
That's right.
We're police.
Yes.
We're inquiring about the disappearance of old Jimmy Stokes and the others, Louis Brennan and Purse Weir. Did you know them?
Sure, I knew them.
When did you see any of them last? What were the circumstances? Did you see anybody else?
Yes, Sergeant, you're right. I seen old Jimmy just after Christmas. Come through here in his jinker with the bay, and half a mile behind him, Marty Schultz. I remember distinctly, because you see, it was like this. That was the week young Wally come down with the measles. And my husband, Fred, well, he was down helping with the shearing, see?
Louis Brennan? Yeah, I've been worried about him, Inspector. You see, it was like this. I bought a couple of plaited leather belts off of him, you know, like how it is, just to help the old bloke out. He was a decent old codger. Well, I was short of silver and I owed him a couple of bobs, so when he never came back, I went down to the billabong where he camped. Well, there was no sign of Louis, but, you know what I found? A great pool of something that looked like it might have been blood. And, bits and pieces chucked around like somebody had got out in a hurry. And after that, I never seen Louis again.
That's quite correct. Purse Weir was camped down there, and so was Marty Schultz. There are a dozen people around there who saw them. It was only just after New Year. And about that dapple mare, why, old Purse had been driving her for years. You won't have any trouble proving that.
Well, there it is, gentlemen. As complete a reconstruction of Jimmy Stokes' movements and of the others as we're likely to get.
Yes.
In every case, Schultz was seen in the company of the missing men, or was known to be camped near them at the time of their disappearance. In every case, animals or other belongings of the missing men were either in the possession of, or are known to have been in the possession of, Martin Schultz. Right?
Yes, as far as I know.
Every conceivable bit of evidence we've got points to Schultz being responsible for the disappearance of these men. There's only one catch. What?
No body.
You're right. No body. No bodies. The question is, gentlemen, where do we go from here?
Question him again.
Go on sieving the ashes of every darn sundowner's campfire from here to Burke and back.
Come on, Schultz. The jig's up, man. Why bother with the lunatic nonsense? I've told you time and time again, you've worked it to death. Tell the truth. Tell the whole story from the beginning. What happened to Jimmy Stokes?
Hey, listen, you.
I'm listening, Schultz.
Well, all right. I'll tell you. I done him. I done Jimmy, see?
I see. How, Schultz?
How? I don't know what happened, but I killed him, all right, yeah.
What did you do with his body?
I don't know.
You must, man. What did you do with him?
I don't know that. What happened to him? I didn't burn him. There wasn't enough wood, see?
Go on.
I must have put him in the river.
Do you want to make a statement, Schultz? You'll feel better if you tell the truth. Well? Do you want to make a statement?
Make a statement? A statement? That's rich. Yeah, that's rich. Go on, prove it, you mug. Prove that I did old Jimmy Stokes. Prove it, I say. Prove it!
After Martin Schultz's nerve cracked momentarily when he realized that pretended insanity would no longer protect him from punishment for his crimes, and he muttered his admission that he'd killed Stokes, he was charged with murder. But he'd make no statement, and there was still no trace of the body. The police intensified, if that were possible, their investigations. They tried to follow the wanderings of the three missing bushmen almost foot by foot, examining every square yard of ground in localities where they were known to have camped, in an effort to discover evidence that would have weight in court. They were spurred on by other admissions made by Schultz about the deaths of Louis Brennand and Purse Weir. In the end, they got their break. At a stock route camping ground where, according to many witnesses, Schultz and Weir were camped just before Weir disappeared.
Hi, Inspector. Come down.
Coming.
Sergeant Hamfield's found something in the ashes of this fire, sir.
Has he, by George? What?
He'd better come down. He's not sure, but...
I'm coming. Onto something, Hamfield?
Maybe, sir. Look, I've just finished sieving the ashes. It was a pretty big fire by the look of it.
Yeah, there's a downside bigger than the average campfire.
Yeah, let me see what you've got.
Metal buttons by the look of them. Yeah, those might be, let's see, boot eyelets maybe. And this?
Have a good look, sir. A really good look.
Well,
what do you reckon? Is it or isn't it?
Yes, Hanfield. I think you've cracked it. We won't know. Can't know for sure until the experts have checked. But I'll bet my bottom dollar it's a human tooth.
It was a human tooth. When the investigation was finished, several human teeth were found in the ashes of that fire. Further search brought to light two minute pieces of bone, which were identified by pathologists as human vertebrae. They lay between the ashes of the dead fire and the riverbank. But no other remains were found. Martin Schultz stood his trial for murder and was sentenced to death when, after a short retirement, the jury found him guilty of the murder of the bushman Weir. He was not indicted on charges concerning the deaths of Stokes and Brennan, of whose bodies no trace was ever found. But when the game was up, he admitted having killed them. And boasted that he had in all killed 13 men, all outback wanderers, to rob them of their few paltry possessions. He never disclosed details of the other crimes of which he boasted, but the police have reason to believe that he did not exaggerate. Only names, place names, and dates were altered in this true story. It was dramatized from Australian police records by Edward Dawkin. Now this is Roland Strong saying goodbye until the same time next week, when there'll be another true story in this series, which is produced in the studios of Hector Crawford Productions by Dorothy Crawford.